Sir, Halvar went out to his trenches to deepen. Per went out to his boat and chiseled away at the rot. Asa left the snow hut, left the last of the fire, and went to sit on top of the bluff where he watched the horizon until it scrambled before him, until water and sky flipped, became borderless. He lay down on his back and closed his eyes. Even his dreams were of blank blue expanses, cold against cold. Asa smelled her first, fishy and rotted, the slog of deep water. He thought, great whales washing up dead all over. You can't move a dead whale. You have to let it rot. You have to live in its rot until it is finished. A year can pass before the skeleton appears, that great bowl of bones. Asa, before he had even opened his eyes, imagined this time next year crawling into the empty carcass, hoping to drift away. There was no whale. The beach was empty of sea giants. Something flicked, a big fish close to the water. It was in the approach that Asa saw greeny hair at the top. It was when he got close that he saw a face. "Oh," he said. "Because what do you say when a mermaid washes up?" She looked unwell. She looked possibly dead. Asa knelt a few feet away, trying to calculate the danger. She could bite, or sting, or enchant. She could drag him off to sea. He let the small waves joggle her body, but when she loosened from the sand and seemed like she might drift back out, Asa drew close and grabbed her by the tail. Her scales were dim. She did not fight his grasp, but he could see a very faint rise and fall in her chest. It hardly seemed fair to discover magic, only for the magic to be snuffed out. "I could have used the full miracle," Asa whispered to the myrrh. She really did smell of the depths. It was an exhausting smell. Asa felt dizzy and unprepared, but he made a soft place in the snow for the newcomer, rolled her into it. Should she be warm or should she be cold? Should she be wet or dry? He took his fur coat off and draped it over her, because this was a woman, though legless and possibly lifeless, and she was the first woman in months. It's good to be a man when there's a woman around. Asa poured a thin rope of water from his canteen up the myrrh's body, tail, belly, chest, throat, chin, nose, forehead. Her skin was pale green, swampy. Asa had to touch her. She was cold and rough. She made his fingertips hum. Water dripped into her eyes and she flickered. Asa stepped back, but she was asleep again, or dead again, or deep in some other depths. Asa decided the myrrh should be wetter. He dragged boulders down and made a small pool in the shallows so the woman could not drift away. It was hard work, and he sweated inside his leathers, had to sit down and rest. Asa drank all his water, but he was still thirsty, so he chipped pieces of ice into his canteen and held it close to his body until solid turned to liquid. The reward. For 50 paces he hugged the thick, fishy body to himself, felt the scaly slap of the tail, the reedy riches of her hair. "Let's get away from here," he heard himself say. "Take me to your fathoms." When he laid her down, he fell in too, and though the water was just this side of unfrozen, he stayed there, floating, his breath gone, his mind cold quiet, his insides swimming. Asa smelled the myrrh's neck, felt a gentle pulse. She was a little bit alive. Any kind of alive was enough. Asa, at night, let the steam steam his face, tried to act like it was a day like every single other. Halvar said, "What was it like to be warm?" "I can't remember," said Per. But Asa remembered because there was a new ember in him. One white coal. Asa remembered being a child, waiting for his parents to emerge from their bed. He knelt on the floor, jealous that his mother and father were alone together, jealous enough that he lifted the heavy skin and walked into the sweat-muggy room. His father stood up, shaggy and huge, picked Asa up by the hair and threw him out into the snow. From something that warm to something that cold. That is how Asa had always thought of love, a shock to the skin. In the morning, Per was out when the others got up. Asa felt an itch to run and check on his myrrh, but he tried to stay even. Halvar grunted and scratched his big chest, stretched to find his feet. "Trenches today?" Asa asked, which was a stupid question because it was trenches every day for Halvar. Trenches were the whole of his existence. He kept himself buried in a long maze, big enough to fill with 1,000 men, and elaborate enough to keep those men alive through a great siege. The trenches wound like the fingers of a river delta all around camp, separating, connecting, pooling in strategically placed restocking areas where Halvar had carved shelves into the snow and ice. They were deep enough to hide an average-sized man, though Halvar's head stuck out as he worked so that Asa could track him, the floating head making its way through the labyrinth, disappearing to dig. For a moment, no Halvar, and then a shovelful of snow sprayed out, glittered in the sunlight. Per got up in the night, sleepless and wretched. The world glowed with discontent. Emptiness was everywhere. There was mist over the water, a hover of wetter air. The horizon was dark purple. Weather was on its way. Per thought about boiling snow to drink or trying to get less hungry somehow. He did not bother to think about heat. Way down below on the beach, he saw a big fish, moonlit, even from a distance. Shimmering. Per felt his blood change direction, his slack heartbeat tighten. He began to make his way through the stiffened snow, picking his steps carefully. With one arm, balance was different and slipping was bad. Per was slow and careful, trying to keep his dumb body from further harm. He thought he heard an animal, something hoofed, something with putrid breath and ice in its beard, but when he stopped, so did the sound. He realized that he had heard an animal. The scavenging beast, hoofing at the ice, was Per. He slid the last few feet down to the rocky shore, and the fish came into focus, but it was not a fish, not completely. She was also a woman, and immediately his eyes made a wife of her, made her familiar, made her his long-lost. Per collapsed over her, rolled her into his arm, let the waterlogged mass of her soak his clothes. "You found your way," he said. He felt her shallow breaths on his neck, and Per wept. It was afternoon when Halvar put his head out of the tunnel, because the sun had grown suddenly bright. It had been a long time since he needed to squint. It was not warm, but it could have been, and he let his mind be tricked. He felt the sun find his face, settle over him. He felt a strange cheer come. Maybe he was a better man than he had thought, or the gods were worse. Maybe in this world he was considered good. He thought of the shipboard kiss, his milky daughter, her dead, him alive. He considered sacrificing something, offering his thanks, but there was no reason to draw attention. If the gods wanted to hear their praises, they could come inside his head. Halvar looked out at the old sea, the horrible, patient sea. At the shore, he saw something glint. A fish, he thought. Dinner. Anything other than dried meat. Halvar had not run in so long, but his legs seemed to remember. Heat spread through his lungs, which were big, dry caves inside him. He almost yelled, "Fish!" but stopped himself. He did not have to share. There was no rule that said any of this treasure belonged to those who did not find it. And what treasure! He saw his daughter, salt-eaten and aged. "Stupid girl," he thought, "to think you could escape me, escape my love." She was helpless and fleshy and alive enough to take. Not dinner, but another way to feed. Halvar kept himself from thinking, knowing his mind could easily unmake this reward. Either he deserved her, or he did not. Halvar took off leather and wool, and his skin below was white and pruned from being covered so long. He smelled like a dog's kill, buried and dug up later. He stood naked over the maid, dragged her onto the beach, and lay down on top of her, her two breasts in his hands, wrung out. "The whole ship went down for you." The maid turned her head away, and Halvar saw a smile slip across her face. The maid opened her eyes and looked at him. And then she twisted, and the scales on her tail sliced him from belly to ankle. Hundreds of tiny knives across his sweat-softened skin. The maid rolled herself back down to the water and left Halvar, blood-patterned, tortured by his own stripes. Asa had waited for a salve to spread on the everyday wounds, those scrapes on his heart skin from being alive and from wanting. On that big ship, surrounded by marrieds, he had hoped for an alone-with-me person. Two and no more. He had imagined cupping the girl's face in his hands, feeling the bones beneath, knowing the shape so well he would have recognized even her sun-dried skeleton 1,000 years later. Asa thought a love like that deserved its own lands, a brighter tundra. When he was young, he had begun to gather gifts for his beloved, whalebone coins and reindeer combs, necklaces with locks of horse mane at the end. Asa put a ring around his ankle, promising before anyone had asked him to. Its twin was sewn into his undershirt, circling his heart like a target. Asa thought of going to visit his myrrh, but he had to think this out first. He wanted to ask for her forever. He wanted to tell her that he felt her scales in his bloodstream, that he was swum full of her. It began to snow. Asa dragged a piece of cloth outside and sat on it, his back against a pine, watching the sky fill with flakes. The myrrh was ankle-less, so Asa planned to click the ring around her wrist. He kept saying, "I know it always happens this way, a wrecked sailor, a mermaid. How do I make you believe me?" Even in his mind, she knew better. The myrrh was old, hundreds of years of swimming behind her. Love worked differently in that kind of time. More chances to lose something, and more chances to gain it back. Her loves had been in the thousands. Red-haired ship's captains, boys just old enough to want to use their bodies, whales, others of her own kind. She was too tired now, too worn through to love anyone back. But here she was, a little alive still, and why not let her good body go to use? Why not let her skin and scales mean something miraculous to these lost boys, the poor land-bound humans outposted at the shore between one nothing and another? The clouds came apart, snow and snow and snow, and the earth was gone. It fell silent and heavy. A new white sea was born. The snow melted when it hit the water, but it covered the myrrh. She was whitened, only strong enough to clean her face. This storm might finally be the thing to bury her. Asa stood on high ground and searched for Halvar in the tunnels. He thought about going in, turning the turns of Halvar's high-walled maze, but the sky did not look like it would clear by nightfall, and Asa imagined the whiteness and the darkness, and he knew that he would not find his way out again. Halvar, he hoped, had some dried meat in his leathers. Halvar, he hoped, had made a den in the ice for burrowing. Asa thought of the big man lying still, trying to keep his own heat. Per squatted at the fire, keeping it alive a moment longer. The wood was wet and whiny. He would bring broth to his finned wife, and when she was warm and ready, he would drag her down to the water's edge. He had considered dragging her across the white earth to his whale ship, where they could live, tending and waiting until they died weeks or months or years from now. He could have dragged her, but he would not. His love was not a carcass. She had grown a tail to be with him again, and now it was his turn. Per would remove his animal skins until only his own pink leather remained, and he would wade into the water, which would burn him with cold, and he would tie one end of a rope around each of their waists, and one arm swim her slowly through the ice-thick sea. He would fight for air, and he knew that his heart would pound for dry land and dry cloth, but if he would keep swimming, if he stayed submerged, his legs would begin to freeze. Per did not know how the next steps went, how a man turned into a fish. Yet knowing rarely made the journey easier. It was up to the gods now. Man and wife would swim for a long time and turn over onto their backs when the swimming became too difficult, and the snow falling on their faces would feel soft and warm and generous, the sky offering itself to them, both legless now, waiting for the leagues to take them home. Halvar, bleeding, could not make himself move. He could not forgive the trillions of white-hot flakes, or the pink-black sky, or the sound of the sea, or his own body, reckless and stupidly alive. He should have gone down with his ship. He should have been more ferocious, or less. He stopped wiping the snow from his face. The snow dressed his wounds, covered his weeping skin. Halvar could hear the thrum of his heart change. He lost his edges first, toes and fingers. By nightfall he was a small white hill, no bigger than any other drift. His body would not matter again until snowmelt, when a pair of bears, sleepish and starving, came to dig around his skeleton for mushrooms sprouted from the richer soil. Asa went to his myrrh. He would stay all night, brush the snow off. He worried that she was cold, though he knew the deep water must be just as chilly. He said, "I can't live in water, and you can't live on land, but we can stay here at the edges. I'll build a house on stilts, over the sea with a hole in the floor and a ladder, the place where air and water meet. That's our home together." "Sometimes it takes a shipwreck," he thought. "Sometimes it takes a tragedy." The myrrh washed back and forth with the waves. She looked into Asa's puddle-brown eyes. It was good, a service, to let someone believe. "I was worried about the same thing." Per was standing above them, holding a broom he had made from pine needles. He knelt down to kiss her. "She found me," he said. He brushed his hand over her frozen hair. Asa knew that this was not Per's wife. This love was his love. He imagined wrestling Per to the water, holding his head under. The snow would still be falling when he was done. He looked at the man beside him brushing their sea beauty with gathered needles. How tended to the myrrh looked. She smiled up at the boys. Asa was heart-swollen. It would be a service to let Per believe. Maybe, he thought, they would all set off in Per's boat, the myrrh trailing behind at the end of a long rope handspun from their hair. The snow would eventually stop, and the black sky would grow delirious with stars. They would sail to her kingdom, and some of them would survive, or none of them would. Asa had enough blood to love the myrrh, but not enough to be the only one. He wanted to kiss her, but Per was already there, his beard frozen and his mouth warm. Asa was freezing. Every living thing was, and the world had slowed down so much that Asa was not sure it moved at all. The water had turned to ice, stopped lapping. The air was hardly breathable. Time had quit on them. Asa lay down in the snow and put his head on the myrrh's belly. Her skin had no discernible temperature. Asa felt Per's glove on his hair. His father? Home had found him, he thought. The differences were no longer the point. Warm and cold, home and away. There was only this hour to move around in, and what it contained. Bodies, ice, water, earth. On the horizon, the frozen edge, green light spit across the sky. The whole endlessness split open and bled.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Away Land, stories by Ramona Ossabel. You Can Find Love Now was read by Kirby Hayborn with Emily Rankin. Fresh Water from the Sea was read by Rebecca Lohman. Template for a Proclamation to Save the Species was read by Danny Campbell. Motherland was read by Cassandra Campbell. Departure Lounge was read by Kate Rudd. Remedy was read by Carissa Vacker. Club Zeus was read by McLeod Andrews. High Desert was read by Amanda Carlin. Heaven was read by Vikas Adam. The Animal Mummies Wish to Thank the Following was read by Bruce Mann. Do Not Save the Ferocious, Save the Tender was read by Mark Bramhall. This program was produced and directed by Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2018 by Ramona Ossabel. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.